The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. You're listening to WSFMLP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough.
And I'm Bursa Goodness.
The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio. This show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you'd like to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Firestorm's full calendar of events and a link to some of their catalog of books and zines can be found online at their website, firestorm.coop.
To friends we've met and to those we have yet to meet, I'd like to wish everyone a happy May Day. As we'll hear in the following hour, this day has a long celebrated history, from its many European pagan roots as a celebration of fertility, as the fruits of the spring planting season begin to spring forth, then on to the repressive winter that fell early on May 3rd and 4th in 1886 in Illinois, with, first, the killing of workers striking for an 8-hour day at the McCormick Works, and then the repression of anarchist and socialist workers and organizers following the bombing at Haymarket Square in Chicago of that same year. From there to the taking up of the 1st of May as International Workers' Day by struggling groups around the world. To divide the international working class, the U.S. government, repressors of that May Day of 1886, sanctioned Labor Day to be celebrated in September, declared the 1st of May both Law Day, an obvious testament to irony in respect to the Haymarket Eight, all jailed and four of which were executed, and for some, its celebration as Americanism Day, whatever the heck that means. In 2006 and 2007, immigrants' rights marches were seen on and around May Days. That, for many, re-sparked the importance of this day. The protests and festivals swelled to numbers nearly unmatched in the history of protest on Turtle Island, and were accompanied by school and work walkouts and boycott days. This hour, we'll be hearing from Peter Linebaugh, author of the recently printed book, The Incomplete, True, Authentic, and Wonderful History of May Day, to present some of his meditations from the last 30 years, but covering ancient times through the first maypole on Turtle Island through today. The rest of the hour will feature songs that made myself and William, co-host of Final Straw, feel a bit in the spirit of the May Day. Whether you're out there today taking direct action against the state, capital, racism, patriarchy, other repressive forms, or in repose from the horrors of wage slavery, resisting the carceral state, gardening, dancing around the maypole, or otherwise celebrating the possibilities of this year to come, when, hell, we might as well end this system of exclusion and extraction. We wish you a fire on your tongue, love in your heart, and free land beneath your feet.
Of the land. The idea is strange to us. If we do not own the freshness of the air and the sparkle of the water, how can you buy them? Every part of the earth is sacred to my people. Every shining pine needle, every sandy shore, every mist in the dark woods, every clearing and humming insect is holy in our memory and experience. The sap which courses through the trees carries our memories. We are part of the earth and it is part of us. We know that the white man does not understand our ways. One portion of land is the same to him as the next, for he is a stranger who comes in the night and takes from the land whatever he needs. The earth is not his brother, but his enemy. And when he has conquered it, he moves on. He leaves his father's graves behind, and he does not care. He kidnaps the earth from his children, and he does not care. His father's grave and his children's birthright are forgotten. He treats his mother, the earth, and his father, the sky, as things to be bought, plundered, or sold like sheep or bright beads. His appetite will devour the earth and leave behind only a desert. I different from your ways. The sight of your cities pains my eyes. There is no quiet place in the white man's cities. No place to hear the unfurling of leaves in spring or the rustle of an insect's wings. The clatter only seems to assault the ears. And what is there to life if one cannot hear the lonely cry of the lapwing or the arguments of the frogs around a pond at night? What is man without the other animals? If all the beasts were gone, man would die for a great loneliness of spirit. For whatever happens to the beast soon happens to man. All things are connected. Teach your children what we have taught our children, that the earth is our mother. Whatever befalls the earth befalls the sons and daughters of the earth. Man did not weave the web of life, he is merely a strand in it. Whatever he does to the web, he does to himself.
Speaking with Peter Linebaugh. Mr. Linebaugh is a Marxist, a historian, and an author. His most recent book is a compilation of essays called The Incomplete, True, Authentic, and Wonderful History of May Day, out from PM Press. Peter, thanks for taking the time for this chat.
You're welcome.
So May Day is this coming Sunday when we'll be airing this episode of the show. For listeners that are out there who may not know, can you sketch some of the history of this great and widely celebrated day?
Yes, I like the way you say is great and widely celebrated because for so many American years, it was never celebrated. The ruling class just hated the day because it was a day of no work. It was a day to enjoy the springtime. It was a day to go outside. Hooray, hooray, the 1st of May, outdoor loving begins today. That's the spirit of the day. And, you know, it goes back to the first agricultural civilizations, you know, around the great rivers, the Neolithic Revolution, you know, with springtime. So it's a time for fertility, you know, up to, I'm speaking from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and the whole world is budding and flowering right now. I imagine that's somewhat past in North Carolina.
Oh, but no, anyway, it's a very sexy place here in North Carolina. There's pollen in the air and a lot of people are suffering from it, but.
All right. So anyway, it was a major pagan festival and survived, you know, through years of dominant religions. The state of England, you know, under the Tudors, they forbade it. They made it criminal to hoist a maypole because people would dance around the maypole as part of community celebration and fertility, as you say. For us in North America, you know, whether the date to remember is 1627 when Thomas Morton set up a maypole in Quincy, Massachusetts, and Native American people and runaway servants and former slaves and antinomians from England, they danced around that maypole. And the first poem ever made in the USA was there. with, and I'll quote it, with the proclamation that the 1st of May at Marymount shall be kept a holy day. So that's 1627. The Puritans from Boston came down and shut it down with force of arms. Nathaniel Hawthorne wrote a wonderful story about it, thinking it was, you know, the crossroads of American history. We could have gone one way, you know, and been happy with with that maypole and the spirit that it represented among different kinds of people, multicultural, we'd say today. Or it could have gone the other way, the way of domination, hierarchy, endless war, and endless work. And that brings us really to the second major aspect of the day, which we need to celebrate with a different kind of seriousness. And that's the struggle for the eight-hour day and the massacre of socialists, anarchists, white, indigenous, and African-American in Chicago back in 1886 at the famous scene at Haymarket. And that came as a direct result of a police shooting of workers at the McCormick Works. The McCormick made the mechanical reaper that brought industry and machines to the earth, to the plains, to cutting grass, cutting grain. But those workers had gone on strike for an eight-hour day, and the police shot them and killed one. And in response, the people of Chicago called for a meeting to discuss the issue at Haymarket, you know, where farmers brought in hay for the horses. And at that meeting, on just a few days after May Day, 1886, a stick of dynamite was thrown. And to this day, no one knows whether it was a police provocateur or a misguided anarchist or what. But anyway, there was casualties, including demonstrators and as well as the policemen. And as a result, a tremendous repression came down all across the U.S., not just in Chicago. And 7 people were found guilty after a kangaroo trial, and 4 of them were actually hanged on the 11th of November, 1887. And we should remember their names. Albert Parsons, we know him especially because of his wife, Lucy, who went on living and carrying the message of the eight-hour day and a workers' struggle right into the 1930s. August Spies, before he hanged, he said, "There will come a time when our silence will be more powerful than the voices you strangle today." And that's been the case, Bruce. That's been the case, that their silence is powerful. And all of us around the world celebrate and remember those workers, those martyrs, as they're called in Mexico. And the ruling class of the United States tried to put an end to these celebrations, you know, right away. They made May Day into Law Day. Eisenhower did that. And then they made the workers' holiday, Labor Day, September, to get it far away from May Day, when workers all over the world celebrated. They wanted to divide U.S. workers from world workers. And I have to admit that they succeeded. You know, people forgot May Day, except for a few anarchists in the 1920s. And then in the 30s and 40s, the Communist Party kept up the tradition of May Day. But the Communist Party, worldwide anyway, associated the day with militarism, and it became something in the Cold War. And this gives another reason why in the United States we've tended to forget that day. Until 2006, when tens of thousands of undocumented workers, most Spanish-speaking, flooded the streets of Chicago again, and of Los Angeles and other towns, calling for justice for this new underclass of people denied basic rights as workers or citizens. So that, well, I should also say my book is called Incomplete because the hope of May Day has not been realized. You know, we still are fighting not only for the 8-hour day, but for some of the other, for equality, not equality of opportunity, but equality of economic conditions. And I think we should fight this year to own the whole economy, you know, and not leave it just to the 1%, but it should belong to us all. And we need to reconstitutionalize ourselves, reconstitute ourselves. But now, first, you know, I'm going off on my own views. But I hope that gives your listeners some idea of the importance of May Day in the past, especially as it concerns North America.
No, that was a really lovely outline that you just offered. And I love the way that in the book you connect themes such as the displacement of indigenous people prior to the period, the Gilded Age of the Haymarket, when the Haymarket Affair occurred, and the clearing of the pastures, the killing off of buffalo and other residents of the great grasslands of the Midwest, and then the connection to the McCormick Works, creating the Reaper that that just decimated the grasslands themselves.
Yeah, and just produced a buzz cut, didn't it?
Yeah.
and then, you know, as a result, we had the Dust Bowl. I mean, because it was so bad for the soil, monoculture.
The essays in the books range from 100 years after the Haymarket, basically, like 1986 to 2015. And from the oldest to the newest, you make the claim a few times that May Day has both a green and a red side. What do you mean by this, and why do you think it's important to remind people of that?
Well, the green side now, as we're talking in 2016, with the melting of the ice caps, you know, the pollution of the Pacific Ocean, the destruction of species, has a greater meaning, I think, than it did when I first conceived of the idea in the 80s. The notion of the green is the notion of, I guess, photosynthesis, isn't it? Now that I think about it, a relationship of the sun to vegetation. And of course, vegetation is the basis of animal life. So really all of life depends on, well, I'm not a biologist, Bruce, but a great deal of life depends on the green, depends on photosynthesis and chlorophyll. So there's a literal meaning of green, but there's also a symbolic meaning of green, which is the joy of living, the joy of life. In contrast to the red I use to signify blood and to signify struggle, especially class struggle, and thinking of, you know, the red flag of battle. So those, and I think May Day is a holiday that spans both these notions. You know, it can be both a family day of picnicking outdoors, preferably, and of dancing, and it can be a day of marching and a day of militants, a day of taking back the world that has been discommoned and disgreened, if I can use that phrase, turned into asphalt, turned into concrete. And so it's had both the green and the red. I mean, the green has led to the Anthropocene. It's led to geological changes of the planet. And I think we can restore it, or not to the way it was, but to the way it could be, only by a red struggle, only by a mass struggle. And I believe people are interested in that and see the necessity of it. All over, you know, that all over the world. Anyway, so that's kind of the red and the green, but I think it's up to your readers and listeners to give to these symbols their own meaning from their own experience.
Yeah, there's definitely, you leave it with a lot of space for interpretation, but draw out some lovely conclusions of your own. How have you seen the celebration of the day change throughout your lifetime? You mentioned that, you know, through the 20s, it was remembered by a number of anarchist activists, and through the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, communists in the United States. Just to sort of intersect or interject right here, my first May Day that I celebrated was in San Francisco in 2000, during the anti-globalization era, as people call it. There was a giant maypole that was raised, and a number of speakers, and at the same time, a big open-ended pagan celebration and picnic that led to a march eventually. It was really beautiful tying together of what you seem to describe as the green and the red, but and the marches of 2005 and 2006, as you mentioned. Can you talk a little bit about how you've seen May Day in the popular imagination during your life?
Yeah, well, I just know, you know, my own part of it. I love to hear about that San Francisco meeting. That is sounds grand and beautiful. And I love to hear about the immigrant ones, the undocumented worker ones in 2005 and 6. And for me, well, May Day, an important day is always May 2nd, because then I tune into the radio or read the newspaper, or now I guess we have the internet to see who else in the world has turned out, you know. And so May Day was so important in bringing down apartheid in South Africa, and is still a major day of struggle in South Africa. And it's that way in so many parts of the world, you know. So on May 2nd, it's just a good time to check in and see what's going on. But for me, it began just, you know, as a historian in Rochester, we thought we'd try to have a picnic and make it a family day and have some speeches and then sing songs. And that's the way it worked there. And then later I moved to Boston and we had different forms of May Day. I remember in Jamaica Plain, we had on the May Day, we joined a festival called Wake Up the Earth. So, and in all these occasions, I would meet people, old timers who had participated in Union Square in New York, for instance, and in May Day celebrations of the 40s. And then here in Washtenaw County in southeast Michigan, there we've always had, well, ever since I've lived here, we try to have a picnic or we have a commons or we teach children how to dance around the maypole. This year, I think folks from Black Lives Matter and folks from other social change outfits will probably go to Detroit to join a picnic and a march in so-called Motor City, which now I guess is known for not as a Rust Belt, but as a place of urban gardening. And so it's important to do that, I think, because the powers that be have been poisoning the waters, as you perhaps have heard of, you know, up in Flint, Michigan. It's just a crime what the rulers, the of our country are doing. And, you know, we need to bring them to justice, to pay for their crimes, not by long prison sentences. I'm certainly not in favor of that, because we need to open the prisons, if anything. But we need to find other ways of making them pay. That is, we need reparations. And the main reparations that must come must restore equality. And so the riches, the ill-gotten gains of the 1%, either they must, you know, voluntarily turn them over, or they must be made to do it. And that can only be done, I think, with justice and mass mobilization. At the moment, we, you know, our mobilizations can't be that great, but it's growing. It's growing bursts. And, you know, people are wondering, you know, what is anarchism? What is socialism? What is a political revolution? You know, these are questions raised by Bernie Sanders, and not to support him, but the questions are important, and the discussion that results from them is important, and May Day should be a day to have those discussions. You know, May Day is a day when we need to think deeply about this and to do it with our neighbors and to do it with all kinds of folk. Everybody has to be, all workers, all working people who belong to our class of the precariat, you know, students and servers and need to be involved in this discussion, you know, as well as farm workers and undocumented workers. Undocumented workers are so important because they bring the experience of other countries, and they bring also revolutionary experience from other countries. And so we have a lot to learn from them. Anyway, so I'm hoping to learn something myself by meeting some new friends this coming Sunday in the Detroit, you know. And by the way, Bruce, can I, you know, I was asking you about the lunch counter sit-ins in North Carolina.
Yeah.
I asked you that for a purpose because I think there was an earlier lunch counter sit-in for the same goal of integrated lunch counters here in Ann Arbor, Michigan in the 1920s, led by Lenore Smith from Mississippi. And we learned this by studying May Day in our own locality. So I urge all your listeners to study May Day in your locality, to talk to old timers, to search out the old records, you know, and even to consult the occasional historian and see what they know and what they remember, and then to bring this back to life. One way of doing this is a wonderful book by Dave Roediger called The Haymarket Scrapbook, which I recommend. And James Green wrote a very good book, too, called Death at the Haymarket. And these are essential readings for those who want to go back to those crimes at Haymarket when the police and the state came down so heavily on the workers, their press, their leaders, and their families, and jailed and hanged so many. In some ways, it's a sad day.
In the Ann Arbor experience that you're talking about, this is, I think, in the second to last essay you wrote, between 1923 and 1928, the Negro Caucasian Club was involved in some of these strikes, right? If listeners want to pursue further.
Right. Just get a friendly competition going between your state and Michigan.
Competing, you know, for who gets the title of first lunch counter sit-ins?
Yeah, for against segregation. Because, of course, you know, the North is so full of Jim Crow. It's even worse in many ways.
Yeah, just kind of a different accent.
They're not poisoning the waters down in North Carolina, as far as I can see.
Well, I don't know, when you got coal ash ponds that are overflowing into the rivers or the leaking of chemicals from coal production, or, you know, in Louisiana,
right,
with Cancer Alley. They're doing it to us everywhere.
Yes. Thank you.
As a historian, much of your written work has focused on the idea and the history of the commons, or at least that's a an idea that you seem to have played with a lot and documented. From which we draw May Day as a pagan holiday in the European context. Can you talk a bit about what the commons were and the enclosure of that and what you think May Day opens up in terms of the opportunity of the commons?
Yeah, the basic thing about what May Day opens up is that the earth belongs to all. You know, I talk about skipping and dancing on May Day, but the earth as our sacred habitat, the earth as Turtle Island, the earth as a place of abundance and joy to share with all kinds of creatures. The way to celebrate that is to climb over the fence or to go under it or around it or through it, because the enclosures, the privatization of the earth, to produce the incredibly weird fiction that a person can own the earth or, you know, part of it. This needs to change. I mean, it's only in the United States, really, that private property is like this and is enforced with weapons. You know, keep off and no trespassing signs. Anyone who's flown, you know, look down from the air, you see the whole land is turned into squares or rectangular grids. This is what the founding fathers did. They privatized the commons. They privatized the free land where people had lived, hunted, farmed, and gathered for centuries. And so that is the commons in terms of North America. In terms of Europe, and especially England, which I studied carefully because, well, I grew up in England, and also that's what I studied and taught. The enclosure of the village commons, the enclosure of common field agriculture, became the basis of the capitalist mode of production, as we say. You know, it began under Henry VIII, who everybody knows because he killed his wives. But he's the one who took a fifth of English land and sold it off, privatized it, just the way George Washington and them did several hundred years later in the 1790s to North America. They surveyed it, you know, with the theodolite and the tools of a surveyor, laid down their lines and said, this is mine, and threw off everyone else who had lived on it, thus creating the proletariat as well as agribusiness. But the commons is a basis of community, and you know, people long for community. They long for useful work, and so they long for the commons, you know, to share the earth and to share the means of subsistence, the means of production. And this is what I meant earlier when I said we must ask, we demand the whole economy, which is just because we really need to rest, you know, to stop being quite so busy, to stop driving for profit, stop driving for, quote, development, to stop driving for, quote, progress. Progress for whom? It's progress for the 1%. The rest of us need to rest. And this is why Sunday and May Day is so important. I mean, there used to be hundreds of holidays every year, but the capitalist enterprise and puritanical beliefs shut down those holidays. And, you know, we're lucky to have, I was going to say, one a week Sunday, but that's not even true anymore. So community, time of work is all tied to the commons. And it's not an accident that Henry VIII was a wife beater, wife killer. He, according to documents of his own age, he killed 78,000 people on the gallows. And this isn't to demonize him particularly, but it's to show at the birth of the modern British state, its project was misogynist, it was enclosing, and then it became slaving. And these are the basis of capitalism as we know it. Misogyny or patriarchy, enclosure or destruction of the commons and privatization. And what was the third thing I mentioned? Oh, endless
slavery.
Work. Oh, yeah, slavery. And I hope everyone has a great May Day, you know.
I really hope so too. Well, thanks for the inspiring conversation, and I guess we should maybe get out there and start commenting, right?
Well, people are doing it, you know, all over. We have to do it just to survive, just to, you know, whether we like it or not, whether it's ideological or not. You know, poverty requires us to. It's either that or suicide. Well, on that happy note.
Well, Peter, thanks a lot for talking, and enjoyed the book, and look forward reading more of your stuff, and have a great time up in Michigan.
I am surrounded on all four sides. I surrender, I surrender to the burning sun. western, a western, a western, a western wind to the mother.
Six in the morning, don't want to wake. Sun laying low and the world sleeping late. Hate like the river runs heavy and deep. Oh, I wish that they'd sack me and leave me to sleep. From seven, the week's hardly mine. The alarm clock's gone over to enemy lines. Waste my time working for cowards and creeps. Oh, I wish that they'd sack me and leave me to sleep. Rain strikes the window, heralds the day. Rain, won't you wash these 8 hours away? Rain feeds the river, runs heavy and deep. Oh, I wish that they'd sack me and leave me to sleep. sing in the dawn. By the time that I'm home, all this day will be gone. Spend my life sowing what others will reap. Oh, I wish that they'd sack me and leave me to sleep. Rain strikes the window, heralds the day. Rain, won't you wash these 8 hours away? Rain feeds the river, runs heavy and deep. Oh, I wish that they'd sack me and leave me to sleep. Rain strikes the window, day. Rain, won't you wash these 8 hours away? Rain feeds the river, runs heavy and deep. Oh, I wish that they'd sack me and leave me to sleep. Rain strikes the window, heralds the day. You wash these 8 hours away. Rain feeds the river, runs heavy and deep. Oh, I wish that they'd sack me and leave me to sleep.
Yeah.
So at the start of that music set, we heard Surrounded by Matador. After that, we heard Chumbawamba with I Wish That They'd Sack Me off the album The Boy Bands of One. And finally, we heard Addio Lugano Bella by Gruppo Ze, written by Pietro Gori. Next, we'll hear a very out-of-print track by the Sonoma County band Spiral Bound. This is Io Pan off of their album Leap Your Lazy Bounds. And we'll close up the show with the 9to5ers anthem by Aesop Rock from the album Labor Days.
Among the leaves, dark and dripping is the night. There are lots of hairy creatures poke their heads out to the light of the full moon as she rises, soft as eider down. So wiggle away your sleepy eyes and gather all around. And from the dreams of mortals, I lick your lazy bounds. I awake and I will shake and I will howl a mighty sound. And so my heart's desire in the furrows of the land, and I fiddle my fingers underneath the rationale of man. I will forge out in the forest, I will dance all in the dark. Hooves and horns and hairy hawkies, I will bow and howl by. I will rust and I will linger in my lovely lady's land. And no more among the ferns, pasty logic eyes surprise. Overturn your mental furniture and banter with the worms. How often my fawny dine will you fiddle my riddle down? With a wiggle and a squiggle where the misty moss abounds. I will forge out in the forest, I will dance out in the dark. Hooves and horns and hairy hawkies, I will bow and I will bark. I will lust and I will linger in my lovely lady's land. And no more am I a sinner than the liar that I am. I open, I open, I open. Tried to fight me and give me weak commands, but accepting or denying may but leave me in their plans. Rules and regulations, for your love you will recant. More platitudes will bind you, and repenting you will chant. I will forge out in the forest, I will dance out in the dark. Hooves and horns and hairy hawkies, I will bow and I will bark. I will laugh and I will linger in my lovely lady's land. And no more am I a sinner than the liar that I am. I open, I open, I open. I open, I open, I open. I open, I open, I open.
zooming, zooming to the fuming of an aggravated breed via the study of post-adolescent agitated seeds. Half the patients waste themselves prior to commencement, so I focus on the urban oxygen samples, the half that made it breathe. This old Pompeii impression sways infection in 12 steps or less, increasing swiftly tipping toe and hard to swallow barter concepts. The give it, get it, never let itself pass for an iron stubbornness. Martyrs talk funny causes in a harvesting Spartacus and so on. I throw long Hail Mary bombs toward cookie cutter Mother Nature's bedazzled synthetic fabric. Life treats the peasants like they tried to fuck his woman while he slept inside, while they're merely chasing perfectionist emblems. When the clock strikes nine, I'll be waking with the best of the routine caffeine team players for the cycle of it. Under a dusted angel off string, Big Brother is watching my odometer like Buzzard the Fallen Elf talking stealth. We got babies, rubber stamps, and briefcase parts. We on some door to door now, order $10 or more, we'll shove it down your throat for free. I'll sacrifice my inborn tendencies for copper pennies for one command to give me that, so we can retain baby back. Megabiter, snake bedlam, holocaust, free heckle, shiesty brain, headroom, shake planet, make a move, pause, make a move, break cannon, bend barrel, 1-8-0, U-turn, squeeze, end it, it's on like it's never been, it's bleeding well, bigger than a bread box, it corrodes my leaky finance, I'll take my seat atop the Brooklyn Bridge with a coke and a bag of chips to watch 1,000 lemmings plummet just because the first one slipped, sometimes I laugh at victory, kissing these little question marks, I tend to underestimate my average, just another bastard savage, someday you'll all eat out of my cold hand, cause every dog has its day at which point I'll pull it away, now we the American working population hate the fact that 8 hours a day is wasted on chasing the dream of someone that isn't us. We may not hate our jobs, we hate jobs in general that don't have to do with fighting our own causes. We the American working population hate the 9-to-5 day in day out, but we'd rather be supporting ourselves by being paid to perfect the pastimes that we have already based solely on the fact that it makes us smile if it sounds dope. It's the year of the silkworm, everything I built burned yesterday. Let's display the purpose that these stilts serve, elevate the spreading of the silk germ, trying to weave a web and all I believe in is dead. Brother, it's the year of the jackal, saddle up on high horse, my torch force Polaris embarrassed, jackal up the hassle by the doom and legend barrage. I bought some new sneakers, I just hope my legacy matches. It's the year of the land shark, dry as sand parched, damn, get these men some water, they're out there being slaughtered in meaningless wars so you don't have to bother and can sit and soak the idiot box trying to up their daughters. Man, it's the year of the orphan, seated adjacent to the fireflies circling the torches on your porches, trying to guard the fortress of a king they've never seen or met, but all are trained to murder at the first sign of a threat. Maybe it's the year of the water bug, cockroach, utter thug specimen, they respawn from dreaming of your next of kin. I'm still dealing with this mess I'm in, I've been the object of your ridicule, you've been a bitch lieutenant. God, it's the year of the underpaid employee, spitting 40 plus a week and trying to rape earth in my off time. Dizzy, I can't keep myself busy enough, so you can run, 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 and I'ma let you think you won. Everybody, we the American working population hate the fact that 8 hours a day is wasted on chasing the dream of someone that isn't us. And we may not hate our jobs, but we hate jobs in general that don't have to do with fighting our own causes. We the American working population hate the 9-to-5 day in, day out, while we'd rather be supporting ourselves by being paid to perfect the pastimes that we have harbored based solely on the fact that it makes us smile if it sounds dope.
Fumble out of bed and stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretching. My life is a mess and if I never make it home today, God bless it. Fumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretching. My life is a mess and if I never make it home today, God bless.
At the Mothlight, starting at 8 p.m. on Friday, May 6th, as Asheville FM wraps up our first spring fun drive with an epic cover band and comedy show. A $5 suggested donation includes a raffle ticket, so mark your calendar and bring a friend to the coolest party in town. Stay tuned to 103.3. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for more information.
You're listening to WSFMLP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough.
And I'm Bursa Goodness.
The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio. This show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you'd like to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Firestorm's full calendar of events and a link to some of their catalog of books and zines can be found online at their website, firestorm.coop.
Minimum wage! Yeah!